Hey, Bill Nye, the Science Guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
What you want is community. What you're looking for is roots. What you want, what you need is the answers. And you will find them in religion, no, not in religion.
It's January 26th, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association. I'm your host, Jess Constantine. Well, folks, it's January, which means it's that time of the year for resolutions, for plans, for goals, things of that nature. So I just wanted to take a couple minutes to let you know some of our plans for The Humanist Hour podcast for 2011. So last year, you heard that our podcast moved under the umbrella of AHA's publication, The Humanist. So we changed our name to The Humanist Hour, and we're moving under their website, which we're also in the process of redesigning. So definitely look for a new home on the web for us. In the meantime, feel free to send us your comments and your emails to podcast@thehumanisthour.org. And if you would prefer to call in to leave us your comment, maybe we'll be able to play it on the air for you. You can call our Google Voice mailbox, so our listener comment line, which is 202-618-1371. And the last of my announcements is that next month will be my first show with my new co-host, and his name is Todd Stiefel. So Todd is from Raleigh, North Carolina, and he graduated from Duke University. And after that, he worked for his family business, Stiefel Laboratories, for 12 years, and he held positions in marketing, sales, operations, and strategy. So he was kind of like the chief strategy mastermind, if you will. So I'm excited to take advantage of his strategic planning for the podcast to see what direction he's going to help us take the show in. Todd is a secular humanist and an atheist, and he's a full-time free thought activist. So that's what he does right now, 100% of the time. He devotes his life to free thought activism. He's the founder and president of the Stiefel Free Thought Foundation. Todd serves on the development committee of the American Atheists and also the advisory board for the Secular Student Alliance. He's also on the advisory board of the American Humanist Association. Now, I mentioned that next month you'll be able to hear Todd for the first time as my co-host. And this month, he's actually going to help me conduct the interview, and we'll be speaking with Sergeant Justin Griffith, who is a sergeant in the United States Army. And we'll be talking to Justin about a couple different things. One is the Army's Comprehensive Soldier Fitness Test, which is something that you might have been hearing or reading about recently. So Justin will be speaking about his experience in the military, taking this Comprehensive Soldier Fitness Test, part of which is a spiritual component. And so because Justin is an atheist, he answered the questions on that spiritual component in such a way that caused him to actually fail that whole part of the test. And he'll talk more about that and what he did as a result of that and how he's turning that into an opportunity for activism and for raising awareness. One example of how he's doing that is that he's organizing an event called Rock Beyond Belief, which is going to be just a huge, phenomenal event in North Carolina coming this spring with speakers, with musicians. It's just a day of fun and entertainment for the rest of us, which is the tagline for Rock Beyond Belief. So Todd and I spoke with Justin via Skype earlier this week. Okay, listeners, we're here with Todd Stiefel, who is going to be guest interviewing with me today. And Todd is on the advisory board of the American Humanist Association. And we'll be speaking with Sergeant Justin Griffith from the United States Army. So, Justin, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I just want to say that I'm appearing as Justin, not Sergeant Griffith. I'm not representing the Army in any official way. I'm speaking from personal experience and opinion. I love the Army, and I received nothing but support from my command, and no, they didn't pay me to say that.
Sounds good, Justin. So, Justin, can you give us a little bit of background about yourself? Can you tell us how did you get involved in this, the humanist and the free thought movement?
It goes back to being raised in the Bible Belt, actually the Texas-shaped buckle on the Bible Belt, right in Dallas. My mother is a born again Christian and creationist. I love my mother. We get along great, but that's part of the mission as a born again creationist evangelical type is to spread it through whatever means necessary, including to your children right away.
Right.
And so I'd say from an early age, like at 9, 10, 11, I was certainly heavily into creationists. I was going to school and converting all my friends, worried about them going to hell. And I actually had modest success at it. I was pretty successful for my peer group anyway. And from there, I think what really, really was the final straw for me was I felt bulletproof, you know. I felt like there's no one could stop me. I got my personal relationship with God. I got creationism. I can debunk these scientists easily. I can walk circles around these things. But then I decided, you know what? I'm going to see what these evil atheists are saying. I was about 13 or 14.
Big mistake. Don't open your mind, man.
Yeah, well, now you tell me. But so I decided to actually research what they were saying in response to the things that I was saying so that when I encountered a well-read atheist, which I actually had not yet, I would be able to instantly convert him, you know? And it kind of, I'd say it backfired, but in the end, I actually feel freed, you know? So like it has a happy ending here, but this is where it kind of gets scary for me personally, a little tragic temporarily, if you will.
Okay.
I stumbled upon talk.origins, and I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the site. It's basically a backlog of the old internet message boards, as it used to be, like listservs and things. And there's a collection on creationism versus, just science in general. And I found this article that it wasn't even talking about the existence of God or Christianity in general. It was actually just very, very specifically attacking just the problems with flood geology and Noah's Ark and things like that, things that were like core tenets of my belief system. And they shook me to the core because they were so logical, and it was like overwhelming decimation of everything that I believed, you know, things that I didn't even think of, like, okay, let's just say there was a global flood, salt water and the fresh water mix. What happens to all the fish? They die, you know, the things like that. Brackish water kills a lot of the fish, like most probably. And 400,000 species of beetles. And like, how did they fit on there? And you got two wolves and you got two rabbits that were starving for a year. And that's how long it took the water to subside. If you allow for that much water anyway. And they are hungry and starving, and you let them off on a mountaintop. I mean, what happened next? Is that what happened to the unicorns? You know, like, what, like seriously.
Yeah,
And what about the dinosaurs, you know? I cried for 3 days, and I stopped, and I shelved it for probably 3 or 4 years, and still consider myself a Christian, but I refused to go there. You know, I refused to allow myself to think about it. And I certainly stopped like converting my friends or whatever, but I certainly was still clinging to, you know, the vestigial organ that is, you know, liberal Christianity, and in my opinion, you know. And so from there, I think it took about 3 or 4 years, like probably about 17, 18 years old I was, and I decided, you know what, I'm over it. I'm not sad. It's not crushing. I learned humility. I learned a lot from it. It almost defined me. It taught me to seek out exactly the opposite of what I think, just in case I'm wrong. It always comes in handy to Google a search term and then Google the search term with the word hoax after it. Now, you know, like I learned a lot, and I consider it not only humbling but important, and I'm proud of that step that I took out. I initiated, and I can take credit for that. And I have no regret or tears or any of that stuff now. And I learned, from anywhere from Dawkins to Barker or any of the great authors that helped me guide me through the philosophical questions that I didn't even allow myself to get to, you know?
Yeah.
So that's how I got it from the beginning, in the beginning.
Fascinating. Now, how did you convert your newfound finding of reason, if you will, into activism?
Actually, you know what? That's pretty recent. I actually did not feel an urge or need to be a spokesperson, if you will, or you know, take the lead in any sort of activism. I was certainly supportive of what I saw, but I never felt the need to, or before I joined the military at all. And in fact, there was a stage in there where like, I wasn't even an atheist. I was an agnostic, and I considered myself militantly agnostic. But, you know, we all go through phases in our metaphase. You know. But when I joined the military, I was actually intimidated at first to call out certain things. You know, even my first day, well, my zeroth day, my negative first day, I was at what's called MEPS. It's a processing station when you're trying to get recruited. And I was asked, what's my religious preference? That's how they phrase it in the Army. And I answered atheist. And then I was like, wait a minute, do they have Flying Spaghetti Monster on that list? and they answered no. And I actually had to change recruiters because of this. While he wasn't looking, I looked and checked because he was obviously very religious, but that doesn't usually interfere with people's professional, you know, in whatever job, even the military. But this guy, it did. And he selected what I assume is his own religion. He selected Southern Baptist for me. And Ooh. Yeah, so I had 30 seconds to act, and I, you know, scrolled to the very top of the list, and it was alphanumeric, but luckily the very top of the list was a dash, no religious preference dash. So that was, you know, I only had 30 seconds to act, and that's what I chose. And it took me years to correct that, to get atheist on my dog tags and on my ERB is what it's called, an enlisted record brief. But like, so it started from the beginning, but it's intimidating. And you feel like a sense of us versus them in general as a lower enlisted, junior enlisted, you know, just a new private, you feel a little intimidated. And rightfully so. You're learning how to adjust to Army lifestyle. When you're going through basic training, when you're going through AIT, you are listening. You are not telling. You're not thinking. So I didn't know what to do when I received random intimidations on and religious discrimination. I think it was religious discrimination, but I don't think it came up every day.
What kind of discrimination did you face?
Well, I'd say the very first – in basic training, I think this is common to almost every atheist I've ever heard of, that foxhole atheist. It's a common complaint that every Sunday they allow you to go to a religious service of your choice. And most of the denominations, like Christian denominations, mainstream Christian denominations, are very close. And you get like an hour to get away from getting yelled at and freaked out by drill sergeants, basically. So I'm not religious. I was atheist when I joined and all of that stuff. So I decided not to go. And they even, there was two or three people that were either agnostic or didn't care, and they decided not to go too. And the drill sergeants were very mad at us for making them, you know, not able to leave or something like that. So they made us stand up clean. We weren't allowed to sit down. We weren't allowed to write letters and, or any of the other things that the other people were doing. We just had to clean until they got back. And we had to wait even for the kids that were bused far away, like the Mormons and the Spanish Protestant. And believe me, we only fell for that 1 week. We did not, you know, choose to stay behind any further. And for every week that went by, I went to the Spanish Protestant, which was the furthest away. And I listened to, you know, what to me was gibberish. And every once in a while, a guy in the back would scream, "Sí, señor!" And we got to dance around. So that was fun, but, you know, it's a little intimidating, you know?
Sure. Now, you mentioned that it took you a while to get them to allow yourself to have the word atheist on your dog tags. What did it say before that?
It said, no rel pref, meaning no religious preference, which I was offended by because I do have a preference.
Right.
My preference happens to be no, but it's not a lack of a preference.
Right.
So.
And so what was the process like to get them to write atheist on it for you?
Surprisingly, it was very easy to, once you meet up with the right person, they call it an S1 clerk, and they will square you away and put whatever you need to change your records. And as for dog tags, they do not issue a second set. they assume that, you know, females will get married and change their name, et cetera. And you may change your religion at some point. You're probably not going to change your blood type. But other than that, they basically don't allow for a second set. And I had thrown away my dog tags in protest over this issue. I thought, hey, issue me the correct one now. You know, it was a moot point, but I finally was able to, the same way everyone else does, that they get their own dog tags made from like a military surplus store right off base or on base even. And mine says atheist/FSM.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Nice. So we've been talking about the kinds of discrimination that yourself and other non-religious soldiers might face in the Army. Can you talk specifically about the fitness test?
Starting last year, I believe the effective date was in May of last year, it became mandatory service-wide. All of the Army, all Army personnel had to take the Soldier Fitness Tracker or Global Assessment Tool. It's got a few different names, kind of interchangeable, but it tests you in social, family, emotional, and spiritual fitness. And yeah, as ominous as that sounds, my fears were actually met with some pretty disturbing, I don't know, constitutional issues, in my opinion. The things that it asks you are, I am a spiritual person, 1 through 5. Now, I answer 1 on that. I don't consider myself spiritual. It's kind of a loaded word to me. I avoid it. Then my life has a lasting meaning. All right, that one's kind of weird to me. That one confused me.
Right.
And it said, I thought about it. I thought about it logically. I tried to interpret the question. What is it asking? And I thought about Abraham Lincoln. That dude, his life had lasting meaning.
Absolutely.
Right. But what about his dad? His dad, no one knows his name. I mean, no one can think of that guy.
Right.
So statistically, I'm not likely to have lasting meaning in that sense. So, but it's not impossible. So I put 2 out of 5. And then I put I believe that in some way, my life is closely connected to all humanity and all the world. It's asking for a rate this 1 out of 5. Now it says closely connected to all humanity and all the world. And I took that to mean me and my 6 billion closest friends are just hanging out playing Nintendo all the time. You know, I don't even know what they're asking. I don't even know how a religious person could answer that question in an intellectually honest way.
Right.
The job I'm doing in the military has lasting meaning, same problem as the other similar question. And then there's various versions of the test. And one of the versions says, I often find comfort in my religion or spiritual beliefs. I think that right there is kind of a smoking gun because they correctly equate religion with spiritual beliefs.
Right.
Sometimes they use spiritual or spiritual fitness or spirituality as a kind of a weasel word, in my opinion. And then they get to, in difficult times, I pray or meditate. And sure, there's probably lots of people that meditate that aren't doing it from a religious basis. But if you look at the way that they're training how to do it, they always do the stereotypical hum and that, you know, the whatever position, the Indian style sitting. And it says, I attended religious services in the last 4 weeks, 1 through 5. I don't even know how you could get a 2, 3, or 4 on that. That's like a yes or a no to me. But,
right.
So these 5, 6, 7 questions are determining that in their entirety, those questions are determining my spiritual fitness score. And then once I finish and I click OK, submit, it says that I failed spiritual fitness, a section of the soldier fitness test. And it said a friendly little message. It said, spiritual fitness is an area of possible difficulty for you. You may lack a sense of meaning and purpose in your life. At times, it is hard for you to make sense of what is happening to you and others around you. You may not feel connected to something larger than yourself. You may question your beliefs, principles, and values. Nevertheless, who you are and what you do matter. Aw. There are things to do to provide more meaning and purpose in your life. Improving your spiritual fitness should be an important goal. Change is possible. And then it goes on to tell you you know, take these, you know, hours and hours of online training, which I immediately did. And one of the first things it said was, to improve your spiritual fitness, you may want to join a social networking site like MySpace or Facebook, or start an online blog. And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm improving spiritual fitness on rockbeyondbelief.com. Join my journey.
Nice.
Now, is it true that the Army also recommended you to therapy?
Yes, they have a specific 1-800 number to anyone who fails any one of the sections. The number actually goes to, I think it's called Military One Source or One Stop. I can't remember. It's basically a bunch of well-spoken, nice individuals that are there to help soldiers at their worst, lowest times. And I called them and they said, so what is your issue? I'm like, well, I just took the test and it says I failed. And they said, well, which test are you talking about? And then I said, well, this soldier fitness test, it was asking me about emotions, family and social and spiritual. And I am not spiritually fit to serve in the Army, apparently. And she said, well, you know, that's not really what we do. You know, why don't you call a chaplain? And I was like, well, I'm an atheist. You know, it's like, I'm just following the instructions here. I'm just dialing the numbers they tell me. And she recommended that I call the people who wrote the test. And I did.
How'd that go for you?
The person who answered the phone, I believe her name was Linda. She was very nice, but she seemed like she couldn't really do anything without there being not just an email from me, but an email from other people. Like other people had to complain about this. So I basically made it my mission to bring this issue to the public, to put a little bit of public pressure on just refining this test a little bit. Everyone needs to understand that this test was put together for noble, worthy goals. The goal, despite the implementation, the goal is to either track PTSD as it starts or as it progresses, or hopefully prevent it, and also to track and prevent suicide. I mean, you can't be against that.
Right.
But we can be against this implementation of it. And I think it's an easy fix to remove the religious smokescreen that is the concept of spiritual fitness.
Back when I was 4 and I knew the name of every dinosaur, I learned how to read ROM comic books, my babysitter said I was really smart. When the lights went out, everything changed, the radio music made me feel strange, and I had a real bad dream about a gorilla in the bathroom. And back when I was 6, I took everything real serious, and I thought that every song that came on the radio...
You're listening to The Humanist Hour, and I'm your host, Jess Constantine. My guest interviewer, Todd Stiefel, and I are speaking with Justin Griffith. In this next segment, Justin's going to tell us more about that spiritual component of the comprehensive soldier fitness test in the U.S. Army.
The boomboxes and the hot concrete, and every Halloween they hung a million rubber skeletons across 9th Street. And back when I was 12 or so, I swear to God I never felt so low. Everyone but me was making out and eating cookies. I had more than my brain could stand. I threw my life in a garbage can.
At what point in your career in the military are you required to take this this soldier fitness test?
You're required to take the soldier fitness test annually, every year, that is, starting from as soon as you emerge from training, as soon as you're able to log onto a computer. It's one of the many requirements that is required of every soldier, and you will keep getting hit with it every year.
Okay, and so you said it's sort of a tracker as well?
Right, it tracks not only your scores and stuff, but it also tracks how much of the training, the required training, or maybe it's becoming recommended now. It's kind of conflicting messages in there, but it tracks how much of these training modules you have done.
Now, you'd mentioned before that you believe that when they say spirituality, they really mean religion. And I was wondering if you had any evidence of that.
Well, I mean, it's overwhelming evidence. My own unit, as wonderful as they are, they published this excellent resource for Christian soldiers. I'm sure it's an excellent thing for them, but it's not mandatory in any way. But it's strikingly titled the spiritual fitness guide. There's a great quote in here. So the spiritual fitness guide is for is dedicated to the members of this command and the DoD employees. And then it goes on to quote Billy Graham. He said, mankind has two great cries. One of those cries is for forgiveness. The second cry is for goodness. God answered that first cry at the cross. He answered the second cry at the Pentecost by sending the blessed Holy Spirit to live in the hearts of all who dare to trust him. My objective is to nurture and strengthen the spirituality of soldiers and their families, even if separated by location. This is not written to create spirituality. Only God can do that. And I mean, that sounds about right. Like, I don't have any problem with the things that he's saying there. And it's certainly not mandatory for me to read that. And I know exactly who wrote those words. And I would actually consider him a mentor and a great officer, a great chaplain, almost even a friend. But that's not a mandatory thing. But it certainly speaks to the spirituality being used as a smokescreen. And the Air Force just recently came up with a new training that says, spirituality refers to the beliefs in higher powers, such as gods or spirits. Now, I don't think they got the script, if you know what I mean.
Is it your impression that when they say spirituality, they don't just mean religion, they mean specifically Christianity?
It's definitely my impression that most of the people that say that mean that. But I think that it's mixed with the people that are make a sincere effort to try to be as neutral in which religion they may be talking about. But I mean, there's definitely no consideration for those of us who just don't have a religion, don't want a religion, don't care about religion, don't need religion, and just are either bored by it or angered by it or annoyed by it or just don't want to hear it and certainly don't want to be forced to hear about it.
Justin, can you tell us about the flag folding ceremony that they discuss in one of the training materials?
Oh boy, can I. This is the Christian flag folding ceremony that is part of the Comprehensive Soldier Fitness training materials here. After you fail the spiritual fitness test, you are treated to the rituals section, and they have since removed this ritual in the last 2 weeks for unstated mysterious reasons. But it's my understanding that it's been banned from the Air Force training materials that already exist, where it seems to have originated. It was a 12. Well, when you're folding the flag, there's a particular method to fold the flag that you're supposed to do. There's just a geometric shape pattern that naturally forms when you want to fold it, and it's called casing the flag. And it's a very specific shape. There's no symbolism behind it. It's just a way to carry the flag. But someone in the 80s, the common perception is someone in the Air Force in the 80s came up with the 12 steps that represent the 12 folds. I'm just going to quote it directly. It says, the 11th fold, for in the eyes of a Hebrew citizen, this represents the lower portion of the seal of King David and King Solomon, and glorifies in their eyes the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and God of Jacob. The 12th fold, for in the eyes of a Christian citizen, this represents an emblem of eternity, and glorifies in their eyes God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Ghost. And what they're describing here are the basic folds in the geometric shape that it basically turns into a triangle, and we tuck in all of the red, so no red is showing, and you just see blue and stars in a triangle. It's an arbitrary amount of folds, and there's no symbolism at all. There's no symbolism to the folding, and this was just something that was contrived, most sources say, in the 80s by the Air Force.
So, Justin, you mentioned earlier the noble goal of the military in creating this test to hopefully prevent and track PTSD and suicide and things of that nature. But I want to ask you, in practice, what are they doing? What's the Army doing with the results of your test?
The answer is actually given by their own manual, and they have a frequently asked questions section. And it states that these answers are being given for HR purposes, and that's why they're being collected. That HR stands for human resources, which necessarily means that they are allocating money and or resources based upon my answers, you know, my wife's answers, everyone else's answers, the 4,100 registered atheists and the over 200, maybe even 300,000 no religious preferences out there. And who knows which way they fall on the religion tree. But, I mean, certainly this is being used to justify the spiritual fitness concept and their multi-million dollar contracts that they are awarding for. Even in Fort Hood, they're building a spiritual fitness center, which is, in my opinion, another word for a mega church. There's spiritual fitness concerts like Rock the Fort, which came to Fort Bragg amongst many stops. And it came to Fort Bragg in September 25th of last year. And it was met with protests from all sorts of groups. I think even the AHA and the Freedom From Religion Foundation, Americans United, like everyone agreed that this shouldn't happen at the same time. They stepped up their game. They sent letters. They protested. They sent the ACLU sent letters and FOIA requests were initiated. And in the midst of that, the post commander, Lieutenant General Helmick, I respect him very much, but he put out a statement saying that we are not going to shut down this event because the same opportunities would be granted to similar groups of any other group.
Can you say more about the Rock the Fort event and who the target audience was for that and who was sponsoring it?
Excellent question. Rock the Fort was co-sponsored by the Religious Support Office from Fort Bragg and the Billy Graham Evangelical Association, which is spearheaded by Franklin Graham, grandson of the Billy Graham. And Franklin Graham has actually specifically been banned from Army events such as the prayer breakfasts and things that they do, but somehow he's still able to do these events that have a stated goal of converting as many soldiers as possible at the same time on stage in uniform. I've seen pictures. They brag about it. They brag about converting 500 fresh out of basic training soldiers, and they caption the picture, 500 soldiers commit to Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior for the first time, as if they could even know that. But that was their stated goal, was proselytism. That's a new thing. That's something that needs to be put in check, in my opinion. And hey, if Rock Beyond Belief's the way to do it, you know, it's a complicated strategy, but we're there for it, and we've received nothing but amazing support from, you know, all of the national organizations. We're really grateful for that.
Comic books and records, and back when I was 106, my only friend was one goldfish. Everyone I ever knew was dead and gone, and the goldfish never had a name, and the neighbors thought I was insane. And I flushed it down the toilet when I saw it floating upside down.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour, and I'm your host, Jess Constantine. The song that we've been hearing is Back When I Was Four by Jeffrey Lewis, who you can hear perform at the event that Justin is organizing called Rock Beyond Belief. And you're going to learn more about that in this next segment.
And back when I was 128, I'd sit outside on an old milk crate and look out at the world from the stoop across the street. The boom boxes and the hot concrete, and every Halloween they hung a million rubber skeletons across 9th Street. Every Halloween they hung a million rubber skeletons. Every Halloween they hung a million rubber skeletons. Every Halloween they hung a million rubber skeletons.
Justin, can you tell the listeners about the event that you're organizing, Rock Beyond Belief?
Our tagline is it's a day of fun and entertainment for the rest of us. So, we've got a lot of speakers. We've got Michael Werner, former president of AHA. We've got Mikey Weinstein, who is actually the president and founder of Military Religious Freedom Foundation. We've got Eugenie Scott, who is instrumental in the Dover case, where the creationist school board members had attempted to sneak in creationism into the science room. And she put a stop to that almost not single-handedly at all. But She played a major part in that, and she's been instrumental in combating creationism since the early 80s. And we really love her. And we've also got Hemet Mehta. He's from friendlyatheist.com. And you know, he was the first one to answer the call. I put out like a help me call, and he actually introduced me to Todd Stiefel. And Todd Stiefel was also one of the very first to answer with some very helpful stuff from the Stiefel Freethought Foundation that actually pledged $10,000 and it's helping us pay for the travel for all these wonderful guests like Jen McCreitz from Blag Hag, who a wonderful blog. I love that blog. She also is probably famous for the most famous last year for originating the boob quake meme after that Iranian cleric decried earthquakes as being caused by women who wear immodest clothing. So she responded with, "Hey, it's time for a boob quake," and it caught it went viral, and that was great. I remember that very well. Made the news several times. We've also got Margaret Downey, who is she got into activism when her son was kicked out of the Boy Scouts for the son's parents being atheists, just for that reason.
Yep.
It started a 10-year legal battle. And we've also got Ed Brayton, who runs the Dispatches from the Culture War science blog. He's also co-founder of the Panda's Thumb blog, which is great. And he's a former stand-up comedian, sometimes stand-up comedian. And I can't wait to see him. He's actually agreed to MC. Really excited for that. We've got Dan Barker, who he's co-president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation with his wife, Annie Laurie Gaylor, and author of Godless. I love that book. It was a great book. He's a former preacher for years and years, decades. And he came to atheism. He's been on Oprah, Fox News. Like he's all over the place. And then, of course, we've got we've got Richard Dawkins, who has agreed to speak. And I don't think he needs much introduction, but he's got the Greatest Show on Earth, which is his latest book. It's great. It's finally, it presents in a concise way the evidence for evolution, which I certainly wish I had been raised on. The God Delusion is probably his most famous recent work, but my favorite is probably The Ancestor's Tale, which, you know, counts back the number of grandmothers you would have had at each step back in time in evolution, all the way back to, you know, single-celled organisms and even further. And it's like you would have 34 million great-great-great-great-grandmothers at this point. You know, it was breathtaking, though, in scope.
As I understand it, the chaplain from the fort was promoting the Rock the Fort event to actually bring the gospel message and evangelize not just soldiers, but also children in the surrounding community and civilians in the area. How do you think he's going to react to the concept of Richard Dawkins speaking on his fort?
I think that's a Pandora's box that they now have to deal with. I mean, frankly, I would say with all due respect, like seriously, with all due respect, because I really mean this sincerely, I think they're lucky it was us, the atheists, and not radical Muslims or some cult or, you know, like and I have no problem with any one particular religion, but I could see it being a big deal with certain hot topic, you know, religious preferences, if that's the safe way to call it. And I mean, just imagine what could happen if we had 500, you know, radical extremist versions of Islam being represented on stage and new converts that are all fired up with, you know, the Holy Spirit right there, ready to go on every base. And they toured several bases with Rock the Fort. So, I mean, it's not just on Fort Bragg.
Can you tell us about some of the musical acts that'll be performing at Rock Beyond Belief?
Sure. I mean, you can't have Rock Beyond Belief without the Rock, or else like my friend, he was being kind of evil and joking around, but that's the kind of friendship we have. But he joked around and he said, "When are you going to call it Talk Beyond Belief?" You know. So in that interest, we've got this amazing band words such as burn. Have you heard of them, Todd?
I believe I have band practice with them later this evening.
Nice, Todd.
Well, tell Bruce and Sammy what's up.
I will. Absolutely.
All right. Well, so we've got Todd's people on board, and Bruce and some great local atheist activists right there, and they do some great stuff. And we've got Spoon Boy, who's a Washington D.C. like punk folk singer songwriter type guy, and then we've got Jeffrey Lewis, who is anti folk legend. If you haven't heard of anti folk, you probably have. If you've seen the film Juno. That type of music that is heavily featured in there is by Kimya Dawson, who does lots of. There's only like two or three really, really big names in anti-folk, and Jeffrey Lewis is probably number two right behind the Kimya Dawson in terms of fame. In terms of talent, I put him at number one. He's a lyrical genius, talks about atheism in a very frank way and an endearing way. And Melody Sheep, that's another big one. I'm interested to see how that one gets pulled off. He's mentioned he's got a top secret band type project, and if worse comes to worse, you know, he's got a great song a set list already with the way he marries art and science through using Carl Sagan, Richard Dawkins, P.Z. Myers, all these amazingly well-spoken scientists. And you know, he writes these little indie pop rock electronic anthems for science nerds like all of us. I know there's one inside every one of you out there.
This is the genius behind the Symphony of Science series, correct?
That's right.
Exactly. Nice. Yes, that's what I'm describing, the Symphony of Science videos. And there's eight of them now. One just came out just a few days back. You should check it out. It's called The Big Beginning. It's all about the Big Bang and what happens before, what happened, you know, during the Big Bang and how it all interconnects.
I wonder if Greg Gaffin would play.
I would love to have Bad Religion play. I'm a huge fan, and I know he's a PhD biologist type person. And his music changed my life. You know, I love punk rock and all of its forms. And he's been going strong. The whole band's been going strong for what, 30 years now?
Yeah,
I think over 30 years. And he's written several books recently. I'd love to have Bad Religion play. We've tried to contact him. You know who actually helped us with that was Eugenie Scott. She got us in touch with his professor that helped him along with his thesis while he was graduating with his biology degree.
Nice.
He passed on a message, but I don't know if it got to him or whatever. But we don't. If anybody out here listening right now is famous, contact me.
And how might they contact you, Justin?
At rockbeyondbelief.com. We've got a contact form at the top, a volunteer form, whatever you want to do. We're very interested in any form of outreach from anyone, celebrity or not. And we look forward to hearing from all of you.
So, Justin, I'm looking at rockbeyondbelief.com right now, and I just want to go over some logistics for our listeners. This is a free event, and it's free to everyone, which is for folks who are serving in the military, their spouses, their family, and also just any civilians from surrounding areas, right?
That's correct. 100% free.
And it's happening at that same fort that you mentioned, Fort Bragg in North Carolina. And finally, when is this event taking place?
Well, we're aiming for a Saturday or Sunday in April, and we are prepared to announce very soon, but we don't have a date just yet, but very soon.
Okay, so folks should check out rockbeyondbelief.com and stay tuned for when the date is, or they can like you on Facebook.
Exactly. You'll get all our updates automatically that way.
What is your estimated attendance for this event?
I'm not an expert, but somewhere between 1 and 11 billion. I don't even know. Like it's so important to me that to go see all of these amazing guests. Like, I can't imagine anyone not coming. But the official estimate from Fort Bragg seems to be hovering around 4,000. But that's okay because the main post parade field that we're aiming for there is able to host up to 40,000, 50,000 for the fireworks annually.
Wow.
That's amazing. Well, best of luck to you. I hope it's a tremendous success and that you accomplished what you're setting out to.
Hey, thank you so much.
So, Justin, please tell me and our listeners about the next steps for trying to stop the spirituality aspect of the comprehensive soldier fitness test.
Well, there's actually some litigation already in the works. There was a not only a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request on all documents pertaining to the questions and the test and the implementation itself, but there was also some a cease and desist letter, and the time for that cease and desist was January 20th, and it has expired, and the Army has not satisfied the Military Religious Freedom Foundation's requirements for dropping any litigation. So it's looking like litigation will go forward. We'll see exactly how that plays out in the court of law. And if not, there are other groups offering pro bono, batter up, let me up next, let me at him, coach, So we'll keep at him until, when I say we, I mean the royal we. I think that as a movement, the atheist free thinkers, humanists, will keep at them until, we get the constitutional guarantees that I think all Americans really want.
Fantastic. Are there any groups you'd like to give a shout out to that have been helping you out along the way here that you haven't had a chance to mention so far?
Oh, most certainly. The local groups, I think, are the unsung heroes here. We've got the Triangle Freethought Society that actually has been instrumental in helping me put together in scale and scope. Like all of the members of Rock Beyond Belief come from the core members of the Triangle Freethought Society, which is a chapter of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and one of its flagship chapters, from what I gather as well. And we've also got this new group going, the Military Atheists and Secular Humanists. And that spells out MASH, which is very clever. And we're walking a fine legal line with our initial billboard that we had up for it. But we've since taken down the MASH television show. But it was cute, and I think we should definitely extend the MASH idea to other bases. Our goal is to get listed right there on the religious preference services list that the chaplains put out every month. 40,000 eyes on. Go to the Baptist church at 7, go to the Mormon church at 8, and go to the Catholic, go to the Wiccan, go to the Buddhist, go to the atheist. We want to be listed right there. And that's our ultimate goal, is to provide a sense of community nationwide. We're in talks with the Military Association of Atheists and Free Thinkers and doing a joint operation to spread this nationwide and actually globally. Jason Torpy over there, the president and founder, he's got wonderful resources and a lot of experience in doing like this new MASH project and bringing it to a global secular military foxhole atheist audience. And that's what we want to encourage.
How have you been treated by people in the military since you've announced the Rock Beyond Belief event and been doing this activism against the spirituality component of their test?
I have been treated with the utmost respect, and even people that I know are on the opposite side of the spectrum theologically, I know for a fact they disagree. They wholeheartedly agree and encourage what we're doing here privately and as publicly as they can even. I hear them talking about it. I was on the front page of the newspaper around here, the Fayetteville Observer, and it's being talked about. And I have yet to hear a single person to my face or even, in person, say a single thing bad about what we're trying to do. Everyone seems to get it. I think everyone agrees, religious or not. And it's a wonderful feeling. It's vindication almost.
It gives me a lot of hope for the future, Justin.
Definitely. Just like to talk about why this is important. It's the U.S. Constitution, and it's a document that I swore an oath to defend from enemies both foreign and domestic. And I don't look at these people who behind the Soldier Fitness Tracker as enemies. I don't look at Billy Graham Evangelical Association as enemies in the traditional sense. But it's certainly violating the U.S. Constitution. And that is a document that defines our nation. And that is something that is as sacred as it's going to get from an atheist.
Well, I'm thankful that you're fighting to defend the Constitution for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. So Justin Griffith, thank you so much for speaking with the Humanist Hour. And Todd Stiefel, thank you so much for speaking on behalf of the Humanist Hour.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me.
You don't have to be a scientist to do experiments. You don't have to be a scientist to do experiments. You don't have to be a scientist to do experiments on your own heart. I had no place
to- You're listening to The Humanist Hour, and I'm your host, Jess Constantine. That was my guest interviewer, Todd Stiefel, and I interviewing Justin Griffith about the spiritual component of the Comprehensive Soldier Fitness Test administered by the United States Army, as well as the event that Justin is organizing, Rock Beyond Belief. You can get more information and you can stay up to date on that event, Rock Beyond Belief, from rockbeyondbelief.com. You can also find Rock Beyond Belief on Facebook. So we're going to end today's show with a video clip produced by the American Humanist Association. And the video is about Darwin Day, which is just around the corner, folks. So February 12th is Darwin Day, which is a global celebration of science and reason held on the anniversary of evolutionary biologist Charles Darwin's birthday. You can watch this video at darwinday.org, which is the website for the International Darwin Day Foundation, celebrating Darwin, science, and humanity. And this is a project that is administered by the American Humanist Association. Here's the audio from the video, Why Celebrate Darwin Day, a special video message from the American Humanist Association.
Why should I celebrate Darwin Day?
I'm celebrating Darwin's Day because Charles Darwin's theory of evolution provides us all with a sensible explanation for the diversity of life.
I'm celebrating Darwin Day because Darwin is a worthy symbol of how scientific knowledge promotes a common bond among the world's people.
I'm celebrating Darwin Day to take a stand against those religious groups that spend millions of dollars to push so-called intelligent design, a form of creationism, in America's public school classrooms.
I'm celebrating Darwin Day because, well, who doesn't like cake?
Darwin Day is February 12th.
Join millions of people around the world who recognize the importance of evolutionary science.
Learn more about Darwin Day and share with us how you plan to celebrate at darwinday.org.
And from all of us at the International Darwin Day Foundation and the American Humanist Association,
Happy Darwin Day!
So that was a clip from Why Celebrate Darwin Day, a special message from the American Humanist Association. You can view that video at darwinday.org. You can also register and find Darwin Day celebration events around your area. And these are global events, by the way. This is an international Darwin Day Foundation. Well, folks, that about wraps up our show for this month. I want to remind you that you can send us an email at podcast@thehumanisthour.org. You can also leave us a little listener comment that we might be able to air on a future show. So for that, just call 202-618-1371. Again, that's 202-618-1371. Tune in next month as we learn more about our co-host, Todd Stiefel. Until then, feel free to listen to and read about previous episodes at humanistpodcast.org. And on that show note page, we'll link to any song or organization or event that's mentioned on that episode. So for example, we'll have rockbeyondbelief.com for this month. We'll also have every song that you heard during this episode, as well as every group that Justin mentioned has been helping him put on this event, and also just helping him with his free thought advocacy in the Army. Thanks for listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm your host, Jess Constantine. Happy Darwin Day, folks.
To do scientist to do experiments on your own heart.